Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money. It's a gorgeous sunny day out there today. Going to be like that all week and no complaints. A nice weekend as well. This is Larry Warren along with Doug Wells. Good morning.
Good morning. Beautiful weekend, huh?
It was excellent, and we're going to be in the low 80s all week, and that means chance of flooding as the snowpack really starts rolling down. And we'll tell you at the half hour what some of the cautions are about flooding. But let's talk first about this morning's show. Should be a good one. We're going to start out with what's a blockbuster book that's just out. It's called Beyond the Label, Women, Leadership, and Success on Our Own Terms. And we have Maureen Chiquet waiting on the line for us, and she used to be the global CEO of Chanel. A few other consumer brands like Gap and Old Navy and Banana Republic along the way. So she was at the top of her game. She now has a new life, and she's writing about it, and we'll be talking to her.
Yeah, no, that's going to be a great conversation. Our second guest is Adam Ross. He is the chef and owner of a new restaurant called Twisted Fern Restaurant over on Snow Creek Drive. And he describes his food as creative, conscientious, new American cuisine. And we're going to find out more from Adam about what he's doing there. And then our final guest is going to be a money manager. His name is Bruce Greenwald. I know Bruce. He's an articulate guy. He'll be a good guest. And he is the co-founder of a firm in Ohio called 1-7. So we'll talk to Bruce about 1-7 and what he's doing here in Park City as well. We should also mention, Larry, there's only two more shows that we have. Larry's deep voice pipes that will be greeting us with Mountain Money. So this is one of Larry's two remaining shows.
Not time to say goodbye yet, Doug.
Not time to say goodbye yet, but it is time to go to our sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're listening to Mountain Money.
Hi, this is Whitney Wall from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain's annual summer concerts return to Canyons Village on June 24th and continues throughout the summer on select Saturdays. Live music begins at 6 o'clock and is open to all ages. More information at parkcitymountain.com.
This is Eric Lee, attorney in the Park City office of Jones Waldo. As a Park City resident for 20 years, I'm proud to support KPCW. Jones Waldo provides legal services to residents of Summit County in many areas. 435-200-0085, joneswaldo.com.
Hey, welcome back to Mountain Money. We're pleased to have Maureen Chiquet on the line with us this morning. Very French-sounding name, Maureen, but you're actually from St. Louis.
However, I am. I was born and raised in St. Louis until I went to college.
Nothing wrong with that. And but you ended up in Paris as the CEO of Chanel, global CEO, and that's after being at some other very famous brands like The Gap and Old Navy and so on. Well, the title of your book is Beyond the Label, and the subtitle is Women, Leadership, and Success on Our Own Terms. So let's talk about all those subjects. And I guess one way to start is just to say, do we need another book on leadership? And at what point do we get beyond talking about leadership in terms of male, female?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's funny. I don't know that we need another book with all the dictates and rules and things you're supposed to do and not supposed to do. But in fact, this book is for men and for women. And really, it traces my unconventional route from being a literature major, where I thought I'd just never get a job, into the sample closets of The Gap, Old Navy, Banana Republic in those years, and up to the pinnacle of luxury as the CEO for Chanel. And really, it's my journey and a lot of questions, a lot of thoughts, a lot of insights that I hope will help your listeners think about how they can create success on their own terms. And it all starts with going beyond the label.
Well, let's talk about those. First, I want to say I agree with you. There is a need for a leadership book like this. I'm the father of two teenage daughters. Your publisher gave us a copy of your book, and I'll be giving that and picking up another one for my other daughter. I think it's a really unique journey that you did. And, you know, one of the
Thank you.
We as parents kind of in a cliche way is tell our kids to follow their passions.
Right.
And sometimes that works, and sometimes that has tangential effects as well. Talk to us. Your passion began when I believe you were a 16-year-old and went to France. So tell us how that set you on the path that ultimately led to your career.
Yeah, I always like to say that my passion started with goat cheese, because I think a lot of times, you know, it throws people off because people think about passion as a job right away. And, you know, when you're 18, 19, 20, you don't know everything that exists out in the work world. So a lot of this is about touching into things that you deeply, deeply care about beyond labels or beyond titles. And for me, it happened early when I was in France. I was 16 years old. I decided that I had to be French. I had to speak French like a French person. I went, and my senses were just blown open by the beauty there. And by the way, the French took in beauty, really savored it, and took the time to appreciate it. And that was the beginning of my journey and the beginning of what maybe some people call passion. I call it heartlines, sort of the squiggly route that led me to being the global CEO of Chanel.
So the path begins at another luxury house, way down the food chain. what was it about fashion that made it become your passion?
You know, it was funny. I left for France right after college, really not knowing what I was going to do, and ended up working at L'Oréal for 3 years in marketing. Seemingly a perfect fit for me, although if you had asked me when I was graduating, you know, what is marketing, I don't know that I could answer the question, but I loved looking at imagery. I was a literature major studying film and trying to figure out how imagery creates emotion, right? So I ended up doing that for 3 years, and I considered myself a marketer coming out of that. Moved to California without a job, which probably retrospectively might not have been the smartest idea. There weren't a lot of pure marketing companies or product management positions available. And I found myself walking down Market Street one day, and there was a beautiful picture of a great jazz musician, Miles Davis. And he had his head in his hands and the soulful look, and it moved me. And I thought, and I looked at the bottom, it said Gap. And I thought, I want to market the Gap. And I went in, I sent my resume, and this is back in the snail mail days, sent my resume in, I guess a week later, got a response, come in an interview. I told the recruiter I wanted to market the Gap. He said, sorry, we just do advertising. We don't know what, you know, really don't do marketing, but you're a merchant. And that therein started a completely new, actually, career for me, which was as being a merchant in retail.
So, you know, for a lot of people listening, particularly younger folks, they don't think of the Gap as being a hip and cool brand and a brand that moves them.
Right.
Of course, the Gap very much wishes that it still was. I think another example is Old Navy, and you helped launch Old Navy. And boy, when Old Navy came out, it was just so powerful. It was hip, it was cool, and it was affordable. Talk to us about that. How does it? You talked about that poster of Miles Davis moving you. You know, how does a brand move away from that? How did they lose their way?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. I mean, I think back then, the landscape was so different. There were a lot less competitors, and Gap at the time was really redefining American dressing. And it felt a lot like it was allowing its customers in so many ways to create their own identities through very simple clothing, and that was unique. So for me, when I think about brands today, and Old Navy was unique in a whole different light, by the way, because for Old Navy, this was before the great growth of Target, before H&M came on the scene, Zara, and many of the retailers who are selling great fashion at lower prices. There really weren't any players in the field. So Old Navy took a part of the market, people who really wanted to dress fashionably, wanted to wear hip clothing, but didn't always have the means or didn't want to spend the money doing so. So there was what a lot of people call white space to go in and really grab a large part of the market. I think today what's hard is with the internet, there are so many new options available for consumers, and there are a lot of things and a lot of ways that you can buy clothing today. So it seems that this notion of uniqueness remains important. But in addition, and I see this particularly, you have kids and so do I, it seems like products have to have much more of a purpose to them, something that moves us or touches us in a new way. And, you know, it could be something that is connected to environmental issues or social issues. But brands that seem to really tap in our heartstrings are doing more than just putting labels on products.
Yeah, you know, you also then moved on to Banana Republic. And I've got to say, I love Banana Republic more than any other store I think I ever walked into, clothing store at least. I hate to shop. And I enjoyed going into Banana Republic and reading their catalog.
Yeah.
But you know, in the end, I don't have a single Banana Republic piece of clothing. But it was just such a great concept. Well, let's move on to more nuggets that are in your book. And one thing you write is that women possess the traits that make them excellent leaders in business. What traits are different and better?
You know, I think women and men both possess these traits. I think that some of them are intrinsic and probably much more accepted today in society in women, which are things like empathy, really deeply listening, putting yourself in someone else's shoes, being flexible, wanting to collaborate and co-create. And what I've seen in my experience is that because women possess these and these are supported in so many ways for women, they have something to teach and share with men in these kinds of skill sets that I think today are critical. They're 21st century skill sets in leadership. Because of what's going on in the world, because of this internet that's changed the way that we look at the world, changed the way that we look at business, that we buy, that we connect to products, because of the millennial generation and other generations, by the way, who continue to insist on transparency in companies, expect more than just products. It seems like listening, being empathetic, being flexible, collaborating are qualities that are more and more critical for success.
Yeah, no, I think those are awesome characteristics as well. I've worked for a couple female bosses in my career. And frankly, it was in many ways very liberating. The styles can be very different,
right?
But it was a caring source of leadership, which I think is nice. And unfortunately, again, I have two daughters. I think a lot of times society tries to train that out of women to society's detriment as well as that individual's detriment, which is one of the things you talk about in your book, which is, you know, trusting your instincts. And, you know, there's two sciences to decision making. One is, and you write in your book, to trust your gut. I think that's pretty close to a direct quote. Versus kind of the decision-making science. And how do you blend those two together? As CEO of Chanel, you had some big decisions that you had to make. How do you know when you're trusting your gut that you can trust your gut?
You know, it's interesting because I think in the field of fashion and beauty, those are emotional purchases. And those are things that when we go out and buy clothing, usually you might have some logic to it, but a lot of times you're buying something because it looks good, it feels right, it looks good on you. And these are things that are, you know, not always easy to measure. So in a way, it's a field that allows for that. But also what I think where the balance comes in is there are all sorts of data points, right? And you can have data points that are your past numbers, your history. You could look at consumer data, customer segmentation, all the things that, you know, lots of us are trained to look at. And those are good, but it doesn't really mean anything unless you, in fact, create a kind of narrative out of those things. And one of those data points is an emotional narrative. It's how somebody might feel or look at the product or the marketing or the image that you're putting into the world. So for me, it's not an either-or. It's really an and. And it's a way of holding that is, you know, like if I'm thinking about history or if I'm thinking about last year's numbers, I can hold that in a metaphorical way, not as a truth, but is something to learn from, just like another data point.
You know, one thing I picked up from your book, and this isn't a direct quote by any means, but men have difficulty managing women because they don't fully understand them. Of course, we don't walk in your shoes. Although there's a fundraising event for breast cancer in which men here wear high heels in a 1 mile walk, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I bet.
But aside from that, if men have difficulty managing women because they don't fully understand them, does the opposite apply?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. I have had really good leaders who are men, and I've had really good leaders who are women. So I'm not quite as convinced that it's a gender thing. I mean, I think from a how you're supposed to act or a label standpoint, our society tends to place certain qualities in certain gender categories. But for me, it really is tapping into this ability to listen and be empathetic. And I think as a mentor, as a leader of many, I found that and as an employee of many, I found that the best leaders have a way of holding in a non-biased manner their employees, and they can listen and tap into those deep needs, those requests, and then respond. And it's really not necessarily a gender thing.
You know, you wrote as a child, you know, obviously your career path, you've been very successful. A lot of folks listening are like, wow, you know, what an interesting life that you've been able to lead. And, you know, the challenge with being a teenager is kids see us as adults, and we kind of have our act figured out. And that's kind of the benchmark. And I think it's important for parents to share with their children that, you know, we weren't always this way. There was a time where we were kind of searching for what we wanted. And you write in your book, and it is pretty close to a quote, I wrote it down here, that you just knew something was missing for you in pursuing things that other people wanted.
Right.
How did you get from that place into knowing what you wanted and pursuing that?
You know, that's a wonderful question. I can the story that, you know, really sort of shows that, I think, is when I went in to take the LSAT right after college. Everybody had pretty much landed their ideas of their next careers. Many people were going into iBanking or management consulting. Some were going to med school. And I was a literature major. And, you know, I loved the notion of imagery and studying emotion and how imagery connects to emotion, but I had no idea what I was going to do with it. So as a last resort, I just went to take the LSAT, and I was in the test, and as I'm taking it, the words were kind of swimming in front of me. I didn't really understand what I was doing. I had uncharacteristically not studied, which I was a really hard worker, and I walked out, you know, and I gave the test back to the proctor and walked out. And I think part of getting to what it is that you really, really love is constantly checking in with yourself when you're faced with some of these expectations, even your own expectations, and they start not to feel right. Ask yourself, why am I doing this? Do I really want to be doing this? Is this something I deeply, deeply care about? Beyond what it might mean in a label or, you know, what success might look like from the outside. And it seems like in many times in my life, and not just that one, I'm continually checking in with myself. Is this something I care about, or is this something where I can make a unique mark of my own? Because I think at the same time that I knew I didn't want to be a lawyer, I also knew I probably, and maybe I would have been an okay lawyer, but that wouldn't probably be where I could excel.
You know, and that goes to the heart of what you write, that a jagged career path, it should really be a goal. Maybe the idea isn't to grab a job as a whatever. And hope to climb the ladder in that organization or that profession until you reach the CEO suite.
That's exactly right. And I think, you know, I look at my zigzag from Gap to Old Navy, and, you know, my desire at the time, I really wanted to go to Banana Republic right away. I was compelled by the, you know, upscale part of that company. I thought I should be in Banana Republic. And I wasn't sure I wanted to go to Old Navy, but it just seemed like a great opportunity. So it was kind of a zigzag, and ultimately it was my taking that job at Old Navy that I think in so many ways helped me get to Chanel, because it's where I had the most experience leading the largest teams and growing my own capabilities.
You know, and we expect somebody to come out of high school knowing what they want to major in and what field they want to go in, And then we expect our kids to graduate and get a job right away in that field. And there's a lot of confusion. Like you said earlier, you don't know at 18 what you want to be.
I mean, you don't know what the possibilities are. So for me, it's really important to spend the time thinking about what it is that you truly care about in the world, beyond the label, beyond the job title, right? And it's hard. I talk to a lot of college graduates and even graduate students who have spent, 5 to 10 years studying a specific field, and they're still confused about what they might be able to do. And I think a lot of that is feeling like they have to choose a career before they actually choose something that they care about. My own daughter is now living in California, and she's working at a farm, for example, and at a brewery because she loves the idea of working in non-GMO sustainable food, and she wants to learn from the ground up. This isn't a career yet. Her job at the farm isn't a career yet, but she's exploring, and I think keeping that explorer's mind, and we all have to earn a living. My daughter included. But if you can keep that explorer's mind and open yourself to the things that you truly care about, I think over time you get to the place you're supposed to be.
Your daughter starting off on out on the ground floor. You did the same thing when you started at L'Oreal. You did sales for them.
Yeah.
You were a traveling salesperson. and I think our audience is going to be surprised when I share this. You say you're an introvert. Listening to you speak, and people may be surprised by that. Talk to us about some of the challenges being an introvert was in the early days, particularly having to be a traveling salesperson.
Well, it's so interesting. I was such a shy child that my mom had to actually take me out from behind her skirt when she had her company over. So she pushed me quite a bit to try to sort of get outward and towards other people. But one of the things that I think was hardest for me, and particularly in those early years, was actually kind of mustering the courage to go speak to someone. And that trip to France was interesting because here I found myself in the northern region of France, coal mining country, charged with selling L'Oreal hair care, cosmetics, pretty much out of a suitcase. I sort of thought of myself as the French Willy Loman, going into hypermarkets, which are 10 times the size of our supermarket, sometimes more than that, and trying to talk to the guy, and this is in a different language too, in a different language, in French, to sell him the product. So I found it, while it was challenging, the one thing that I found was interesting, being an introvert, and it made me kind of listen more and take in more what somebody else's reactions would be. And in this case, the person who was buying the products actually was interested in other things. He had frozen peas. He had sanitary concerns. I was just another salesperson. And so being an introvert actually had taught me to pick up cues. And as I kind of saw the cues that he didn't really care about my marketing arguments, I could start to move into what he did care about, which was a negotiation on the end cap. And so while being introverted does have disadvantages because I think you feel awkward and feel like an outsider a lot of times, it also has advantages in, I think, giving you a broader or wider perception field.
Well, Maureen, thanks so much for joining us this morning. You've had an interesting path up to the top of Chanel. And you said when you registered for LinkedIn, you thought, what do I call myself? So what do you call yourself now? What's your future or present profession?
I don't know that I've landed on the perfect label yet, but what I've been up to is doing a lot of speaking to both students, executives, and companies about how they can all go beyond the label. And also, I really love to write again, so maybe right now I'll just call myself an author.
Well, now you can put your English Lit degree to use, finally.
That's true. Well, thanks so much.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us. Maureen Chiquet, the former global CEO of Chanel, has joined us. The book is Beyond the Label, Women, Leadership, and Success on Our Own Terms. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Maureen. We enjoyed having you.
And let's talk about the weather. We have a flood watch in effect all week because it's going to be getting rather warm in Park City and in the mountains above us, and that means the snowpack is going to come down in a hurry this week. So we have sunny skies all week, some clouds passing through. Most days are kind of partly cloudy, but after a high of 79 today, we're going to be in the 80s for the rest of the week, and certainly well above freezing at night, so in the 40s and 50s at night. And that means a flood watch is on for the stretch of the Weber River between Smith-Morehouse Reservoir and Rockport Reservoir. That means there is the potential for flooding based on current forecast. There is no flooding at the moment, but the way it looks like it could. And, you know, in the way that snowmelt occurs in the afternoon when our temperatures peak, but that flow doesn't really hit the river until late at night. So the highest water is late at night. Obviously, the caution is don't let your kids anywhere near. We've had a
couple. Don't let your kids and don't let yourself get too close. We had the fire chief of Park City on Leslie's show this morning, or a soundbite from that, just warning of how dangerous.
Well, and we've had
fast moving water, which is actually pretty slow.
We've had three drownings already along the Wasatch Front. So, yeah. And if you are between Smith and Morehouse and Rockport and need sandbags, you can get sand and bags either at Oakley City Hall or the Woodland LDS Church. And when we come back, let's talk about food. We'll be here with Twisted Fern Restaurant's owner, Adam Ross, after this.
This is Allison Kulo with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau provides your business with benefits, from lodging projections, educational videos, group sales leads, and a listing on the top travel site for Park City, and much more. Becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining can be found at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and KPCW supporter.
Mountain Money on KPCW is sponsored in part by Columbus Pacific Properties, presenting Viridian, 21 new residences along the 11th fairway of the Canyons Golf Course with year-round amenities and gondola access. Summers on the fairway, winters on the slopes. More information at ViridianParkCity.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. In studio with us now is Misha and Adam Ross. They are the owners of the Twisted Fern Restaurant over on Snow Creek Drive. Welcome to Mountain Money.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So tell us about Twisted Fern Restaurant. What's kind of the concept? What can people expect when they go there?
Concept is just simple, modern, slightly elevated cuisine at an affordable price. Do you have anything to add, Misha?
Yeah, Adam's been a chef here in Park City for the last 10 years, so he is, I think, familiar with what Park City locals are looking for in a dining experience, and he was really interested in opening something that catered more to the local audience and was something that we could, you know, invite people. People could come out on a Tuesday night, just come as you are, but still have kind of that elevated cuisine.
Okay, so what kind of cuisine is elevated? And affordable.
And affordable. It's new American, so it'll be takes on traditional fare with a slightly Mediterranean influence. Just very fresh ingredients, just clean flavors. You won't leave going that wah in your mouth with like a lot of sodium or MSG that you get.
Yeah.
Give us some idea of menu items that you have on the menu.
So a popular menu item that we have right now is the buttermilk chicken fried portobello with cauliflower grits and a whiskey peppercorn gravy.
Those sound like things I've ever had before.
But they do
sound
delicious.
And also not Spanish that I just mentioned. And then we also have a plancha cooked calamari. So instead of it being breaded and deep fried, it's just hit on a plancha, so a hot flat top, with some chili oil, some baby potato, some fresh parsley, and a chili oil.
Good.
I'm missing something
okay.
right now.
Sounds good.
It does sound good. And what was in the space before you guys moved in?
Mangia Pizzeria.
Okay.
Okay, and that has it and before that it was a burger place.
Yes.
And it was a bar at one time too.
Correct.
So does that give you any pause? It's been through 5 different iterations in recent years. It seems like a great location because you can park right out front.
It's a this fantastic is, location.
Yeah,
there's
this
56
is,
spots in front of it.
This is near the Park City Market. This is in that shopping center on the right side if you're facing it, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's got a nice patio that's east-facing, so it's got fantastic sun for lunch, and then you're in the shade by about 5 o'clock.
So what meals are you serving all three meals?
Lunch and dinner, 11:30 a.m. until about 9:30 at night.
Okay, full liquor license?
Full liquor license. Right now we have the Zion Curtain, which goes down July 1st, which we got approved of. So come July 1st, we'll have traditional bar seating that's accompanied with the full dining room.
Okay, very fine. So what was your path to get here? Have you been cooking up and down Main Street for some time?
I was at Bistro 412 right across the street for close to 10 years. I was living in Colorado before then, and was cooking in upstate New York as well. That's where I grew up.
So you've chosen food as your
as your
passion and your
yes.
profession.
Yes.
So you know, talk to us about when you make the decision as to the type of food and the price point that you're going to offer. You know, quality food at an affordable price, that's getting harder and harder to find here in Park City. Mm-hmm. Did you think about, like, if you had gotten a spot on Main Street, would you have done that? And would you have done a different concept? Or is there something about this segment that appeals to you?
I think that so many things go into how you can price out your products in every business, right? And so we know that rent is a big factor, and we know that the cost of the products is also a big factor. And one of the things that Adam also does differently that he doesn't talk about near enough is he makes as much as he can in-house. So we often talk in the food and beverage industry about buying locally sourced items and buying from purveyors that we know and whatnot, but Adam will produce his own pasta, for example, or make his own processed meats and whatnot. So while he's buying only the raw ingredients, so that's also a way to keep costs down. So I think that for us, we wanted to be, we love this location because it's in the middle of Prospect, or where we live, it's in the middle of Park Meadows. It's really somewhere that you can ride your bike to. You know, the city's really big on promoting the whole ride on right now and really walking and taking the bus and biking. And that's something that's great and something that we're also really passionate about. And so the fact that we're kind of in the middle of the community is something that was really important to us. Sure, we would love to have a restaurant on Main Street one day, but we also have to be fiscally responsible as a family. We have a young baby, and so we have to do what's right for our family. And so this location was something that we could get started and not be, you know, and hopefully make a go
at. I guess what I was asking really was, you know, what came first, the concept and saying, okay, this is our vision, and let's find a location that the yep. rent and everything's consistent and allows us to work. And it sounds like really it was an opportunity that the Snow Creek
yeah.
facility was available, and then you guys ran the numbers and said what works, which is really, really smart.
There's not very many spaces available, so we sort of had to go with what we could, what was available. I mean, there were two.
Yeah.
Were you more interested in being in town? Did you look at Kimball Junction? Did that seem likely, or did you want to be in town?
I wanted to stay in town within city limits.
And what kind of price points can you maintain in town and make a living?
So my price point is $3 to $28 right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And a 28 gets you what kind of an entree?
It's a prime Nyman Bavette steak with fried fingerling potatoes, a peppercorn demi.
Okay. Now, when you shop locally. That's what everybody is trying to do, is source their food locally. Mm-hmm. Are there enough purveyors to get a you obviously can't go to the local calamari farmer.
Nope, not at all. Not at all.
but are you finding you can get most of what you need within, say, you know, whatever the diameter is, 100 miles of Park City?
Within reason. I like to say it's like Intermountain West. So kind of from the Rocky Mountains west, I try to source most of my stuff from.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that freshness theme and buying locally, clearly that's resonating with folks now. Mm-hmm. How are you getting the message out? Obviously, being on the radio show this morning helps, but how are you helping people know that you guys are there?
Oh, yeah, well, I happen to have a marketing background here.
Misha
in
is the queen of marketing. That helps.
So we have great relationships also. I think that, generally speaking, Park City is a huge relationship town. And so we have our lovely relationships with the folks here at KPCW. And then we have Dishing PC coming over this afternoon to do some stuff. We have Facebook and Instagram. We have a website. And then also we were fortunate enough through relationships to host a party for Sundance Saturday evening. So just really relationships, and we're hoping to get the word out a little bit organically at first, because we do want to grow smartly, and we don't want to, we don't want to overwhelm ourselves. We want to make sure that we provide a quality experience, and then we'll kind of go from there. But we have some great leads for some different things coming up this week.
So I looked at your website, and it showed that all through May, you are building out a shell of a space.
Yeah.
Yes.
So clearly you haven't been open. Have you been open yet, or just open softly for private functions? Or
softly beginning this past Friday night.
Okay. So this is so brand new.
Yeah.
You've served one meal out of it so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when will you be open for real? And
today.
And today is the day.
Yesterday, but yeah, we're ready.
Okay, so you've got to run back and get lunch preps underway.
Yeah.
Well, very fine. Well, thanks for joining us, and
thank you.
And good luck to you. Misha and Adam Ross are the owners, and Adam is the chef at the Twisted Fern Restaurant at 1300 Snow Creek Drive, over in the. Near the Park City Market.
Open for lunch and dinner, and open for lunch today. So
correct.
11:30 to 9 daily, so give it a try. And we'll be back after this.
This is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We are committed to serving Park City and are proud supporters of KPCW. More information at bhhsutah.com or one of our 24 offices throughout Summit and Wasatch Counties.
Gordo here.
And I'm Larry with All Resort Group, a proud sponsor of KPCW.
Since 1974, we've been part of this community with shared ride, private van, and SUV service for our customers.
Reservations available at allresort.com or 649-3999.
We move people.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. In studio with us now is Bruce Greenwald. He is the co-founder of a wealth management shop called 1-7. Bruce, welcome to Mountain Money.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
So, Bruce, you and I have known each other for several years. You're an active member of the Park City Angels. We've talked about, we're in this very similar business, so we've talked about business before. Tell our audience what 1-7 does.
1-7 is a new investment advisory firm here in Park City, and that provides investment advice and investment counsel to both individuals and families. What we're trying to do is to help people connect their money with the things that are most meaningful to them in their lives. We want our clients to really make a meaningful mark on the world as far as that goes. We were founded, our name was founded, 1-7, where it's one client, one advisor, one relationship, and the seven pillars of wellness. Now, the seven pillars of wellness, a lot of people ask, what are the seven pillars of wellness? Well, the seven pillars of wellness are financial, physical, community, family, work, mental, and spiritual.
You know, when you first told me the firm's name, you said, guess what that stands for? And I don't know if you remember my reply.
I remember. Well, it was July 4th of last year.
Oh, okay. It was. Yeah, we were at the parade. But I said, well, it's your fee schedule. And you chuckled and said, well, I didn't think of that. But let's talk about not your fee schedule, but there's something very big taking place in our business actually just this week. Today's right. June 5th. June 9th, the world's a very different place for many wealth managers. Tell the audience what's going on June 9th.
Well, on June 9th, there's a change with the Department of Labor that has to do with the change in fiduciary rules. And it's interesting. A lot of the big wirehouses or brokerage firms have to come into compliance to meet the Department of Labor rules, which have to do with retirement accounts. So retirement accounts, which used to be you could do brokerage business in a retirement account. Now it's retirement accounts really have to be fee-based accounts. So,
and a lot of people don't know the difference. So what's the difference between the Department of Labor rule is called the fiduciary rule.
Correct.
What's the difference between being a fiduciary versus being a broker-dealer or being under what's called the suitability standard?
So being a fiduciary really means that you have to be on the same side as your client. As a broker-dealer, really the broker-dealer did not have to really look out for the client. But as a fiduciary, you and your client are really partners together. And that is really the best thing it's the best thing for the client. I think it is a fantastic rule. And to be honest with you, sorry, Larry.
No, go ahead.
To be honest with you, I think that's one of the reasons that we left Morgan Stanley was, and we're seeing a lot of other advisors leave to go independent because the independence actually gives your client a much better relationship through being able to partner with them.
So let me see if I understand the difference. You go to a stockbroker and he gives you investment advice. He may not be giving you pure investment advice that is totally best for you, but he may be just trying to get you to buy and sell a lot of stock so he gets a commission on each trade. And hopefully he does well enough that you're happy with him doing that. But I've had situations where a guy said, you need to buy this stock. It's perfect for you. And then 3 weeks later he calls and says, you need to sell that. It's not so great, but this one's better.
I think that was the old style of wealth management. I think wealth management has really changed in the industry overall.
And by being on the same side, what you mean is you – your fees are based on how much you, a percentage of that client's account. So if his account goes up, you're rewarded, and if it doesn't go up, you're less rewarded?
That's how does that correct. Work? Really, we're on the same side. So if a client's account goes up in value and we're charging a percentage of fees, then obviously those we would have more revenue in the firm. If the client's account goes down in value, then we have less. Then there's less revenue.
So the incentives are aligned. But Larry, I would say even more importantly, legally, Bruce and also my firm, we are fiduciaries. We have signed up to be fiduciaries and put clients' best interests first. Versus a broker dealer is not signing up for that.
So that is correct.
It's called the suitability standard. It's very different. And where it matters, actually, just last week, there's a think tank called the Economic Policy Institute. And they put out a study, and they show that in the U.S. alone, by taking what they call conflicted advice, in the United States, investors lost $17 billion. And what's interesting is they actually broke it down by state. In the state of Utah alone, for 1 year, investors lost over $100 million. So it's pretty significant. But that's coming June 9th. For retirement accounts, legally, advisors are now required on your retirement accounts only to be fiduciary. So that's a big thing that's timely. I don't want to take all of our time talking about it, but I just wanted to let our audience.
I think it's very timely, and I think it really works in to what our firm is about. And it is, again, it comes back to the partnering with our clients and being the fiduciary to our clients. As a registered investment advisory firm, which is what we are, under the Registered Investment Advisory Act of 1940, All right.
Somewhere around there.
Somewhere around there. 1940.
I would have said 1940.
It might be in 1942.
Before your time.
Before all of our times, I think. You have a fiduciary standard that you have to uphold to
but
your client.
Let's talk about this new wave of wealth management. And it's kind of new for some folks. For our firm, which is 35 years old, it's kind of been our core. It's new for you guys because you just started your firm a couple of years ago.
July of 2016.
Okay, so July of 2016. And you talk about the seven pillars. Tell us what a couple of those are.
Well, obviously financial is one of those pillars, all right? Financial wellness is everybody needs to have financial wellness, and the reason is that, you know, financial, family, and health are the three main things that are important to anybody who basically lives. And so, you know, the other ones that we're really working on, though, is community. And one of the reasons we opened here in Park City was that the Park City community really fits our firm. And our firm is all about community and lifestyle and family, all right, besides the financial things that we do.
Okay, but what does a financial advisor have to do with your physical well-being, your family strength?
Well, Larry, think about it.
I go to you for marriage counseling as well?
You would be surprised what our clients come to us about. And our clients come to us about almost everything. We say in our firm that we go beyond the balance sheet, all right? What does that mean? It means forming a very deep relationship with our clients where they can almost come to us almost like a bartender, okay? You think about bartenders, you know, people
you
go and talk to their to them about their problems
yeah.
all the time, you know? So, you know, our clients, we have that deep relationship with our clients where they come to us about all the things that are important to them. And it may be their kids, okay? It may be their legacy. It may be, you know, they want to give to a nonprofit. How do we do all that? And that's what they depend on us. We want to be their quarterback, really, all right? And that really is a difference maker in our firm, in the relationships, the deep relationships that we build with our clients.
Okay, so the firm started in Ohio?
Actually,
in Ohio?
The main office, I moved here from Ohio 5 years ago. My wife and I moved here for lifestyle, basically.
Came here on ski vacations and wanted to.
The four of us were with Morgan Stanley for 8 years, and prior to that, I've been in the wealth management industry for about 15 years.
Ironically, Bruce, your business that you left and your partners left to start this one, that business was about 30 minutes away from where I grew up outside of Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
Right.
And left about 40 years ago. So,
right.
You know, another point of similarity between our past is you also worked at British Petroleum.
Correct.
And I want to talk about that, not because today we're going to talk about oil, but... You were in their trading group and you traded derivatives and futures and currency trading, which
correct.
All sound like very risky investments. And for the average person listening, they very much are risky investments. But they do have a place and they were actually created for business. So when you were working for British Petroleum, from an investment management standpoint, you know, what were you doing with derivatives? What were you doing with futures and currency? I want people to understand the business tools, that the purposes of some of these investment tools.
So I was head of their the foreign currency hedging area for BP under the Treasury unit, and we were responsible for really hedging using these derivatives to protect the company's balance sheet. And so these derivatives and what I would call options are used to really protect to protect against events that may take place,
you know,
that
irony,
are outside of our purview.
Is absolutely, you use the word protection, and that's absolutely what it is. Larry, think about it. If British Petroleum has money coming in from China and they want to hedge that currency risk, so if the Chinese currency is worth less 6 months from now, they can lock in the value today, right? So you're protecting it as a business. Ironically, though, it's now the biggest use of these tools are as trading. So Larry, if you came to me and said, hey, I think China's currency is undervalued, I think it's going to go up, and you want to buy some futures on it, that's an enormously risky thing.
So what are you saying? This is now something you can bring into personal investing?
Individuals can do it. I would argue most individuals should not do it.
You know, look, at the end of the day, our business is really all about risk management for our clients. And risk management can take a lot of different aspects. My background in risk management, whether it be at British Petroleum or whether it be in the number of banks that I worked at prior to being in private wealth management, all help to assist our clients in managing the risk of their daily lives, in managing the risk of the markets. And really, that's why clients turn to us and turn to the experience that we have.
Well, that's probably a pretty good note for us to leave it on. It is about risk management. Once you've won, you only need to win once, but you better protect it once you have won. Our guest this morning has been Bruce Greenwald. He's the co-founder of 1/7. Bruce, thanks for coming in.
Okay, thanks, Doug.
And we'll be back to wrap up Mountain Money after these words.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. I had a great conversation to start things off with Maureen Chiquet, who was started with L'Oreal and kept with the clothing and personal care line all the way up to be CEO of Chanel in Paris.
Yeah, that was a great conversation. And then we talked with Adam and Misha Ross. We wish them well at their new business, Twisted Fern Restaurant, over at 1300 Snow Creek Drive. And then our final guest who just departed is Bruce Greenwald, co-founder of 1/7. We thank our guests, and we also thank the great sponsors for Mountain Money. They include Mountain West Bank, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Jones Waldo, Holbrook and McDonough, All Resorts Express, Park City Mountain, and Apex Residences and Viridian Park City, Columbus Pacific Properties.
And as of today, we have a new general manager at KPCW, Renee Bodley.
Yes, we do.
Takes over today as I am down to the final 2 weeks. I'll be showing her the ins and outs as much as I understand them of KPCW.
And after how many years here, Larry?
Seven plus years. Started in April of 2010, I think. So.
And you sent me an email on a different subject last week and mentioned 46 years of broadcasting. That's a long time.
Yeah, I started as a student intern at the University of Utah on the number one rocker in the valley.
Warren, number one rocker in the valley.
KCPX, which was a monster station back in the day when the AM band is where everybody was. And then ventured into TV and back to radio at the end. And radio is just so much fun. But we'll talk about that maybe next week a little bit as I wrap up. So right now, let's just remind you that this flood watch is in effect all this week on the Weber River. We're not too worried about the Provo, apparently. We're just worried about the Weber at the moment. And between Smith Morehouse and Rockport above Oakley and then on down through Oakley to Rockport, that's where the trouble could be. So be aware of that if you're in that neighborhood, and you can get sandbags at Oakley City Hall or the Woodland LDS Chapel. So that's it for us. Thanks so much for joining us. We're headed for a high of 79 today, low of 47, and then it'll be in the low 80s.